Welcome back, guys, to your A-List Lowdown coming at you June 3rd, 2025 with Going Postal and Survey Says. Should be a good one. I got a few things to go through, including a few things about, because last time we kind of talked about the Amazon thing, which, of course, when I tried to dig into, just went into like a huge Trump fighting with the USPS debacle. So it kind of turned into a bit of a shit show, but I was able to find a few things we can get into a little bit later.
Cool.
Yeah, what about you? What you got?
I got that survey. I want to do that poll with you.
Oh, right. The one we did one thing on, right?
Started doing it yesterday, and then I was like, and then you said, let's save it for the A-List. So it's, is Canada moving in the right direction? So, I mean, I guess we're going to give up our detailed thoughts and feelings on Canada during this episode, but that's okay.
I think we've already done that.
Yeah, exactly. Because we were talking about other poll. I think you were talking about another poll, or I can't remember what it was now. So it'll be interesting for sure. Let's see what the questions are. This is from the Epoch Times. You want to start off with that?
Yeah, start with that. Yeah.
Okay. So here we go. This is from the Epoch Times from X. So I'm going to just show you. There's only 9 questions here. So after the federal election, do you think Canada is moving in a better direction? Just going to zoom in on this a little bit here. So here's the options. Yes, I'm optimistic about Canada's future. No, I think things will get worse. I don't expect much to improve, maybe too soon to tell, and I'm not sure. So, I mean, I'd love to, you know, be positive about this and hope that Carney was going to move to the right and really do what they're going to say. But I think I'm just going to say, no, things will get worse.
I would agree.
Next, how confident are you in the new government's ability to manage Canada-US trade relations? Very, somewhat, not very, not confident at all, unsure. So I'm going to say not confident for that as well.
I would have to agree.
This is going to be a nasty poll, especially because it's Epoch. So the people that are reading Epoch are already going to be like non-mainstream people. In your view, what should be the top 3 priorities for the new government to address immediately? Top 3 immediately. The economy, cost of living, housing affordability. This, to see, the weird part is, right? Governments, I mean, we shouldn't need to address some of these things, but I guess this is where we're living. This is what's happening. Housing affordability, health care and wait times, Canada-US trade talks, national debt and government spending, income tax cut, energy policies, public safety and crime, immigration, freedom of speech and civil liberties, and other. So
I've got I would say cost of living.
Yeah, me too.
Go down, down, down. Freedom of speech and civil liberties.
Oh, you're going to guess the exact same 3 as me.
And immigration.
Oh, mine was energy policies over immigration. Energy policies and immigration. Public safety would be one too. I mean, like, honestly, a lot of these things have to be addressed, but I just don't think it's easy for the government to address some of this stuff. So I'm going to put energy policies. Let's see what it says. Below are some of the key policy commitments Prime Minister Carney announced during the election campaign. Which of these do you consider the most important priorities for Canada right now? Select all that apply. So what do we consider the most important priorities? And these are the ones that he says during the campaign that he was, the key policy commitments. Remove interprovincial trade barriers.
Check.
Okay. Cancel the capital gains tax hike.
Check.
Build 500,000 affordable homes per year.
No.
Okay. Make Canada an energy superpower.
Check.
I mean, I guess. I mean, just don't. I think it's all verbose, garbage. Reduce federal spending growth.
Check.
Increase CBC funding. Pass.
Pass.
Boost foreign aid by at least $800 million per year. Invest $4 billion in healthcare facilities, building healthcare facilities.
Sure. I guess. If the government's going to be involved in healthcare, they might as well
do it right or try to do it right. Increase carbon tax on industry. No. Boost defense spending by $18 billion over 4 years.
Oh, we should do that.
Increase funding to support. Oh, they forgot 2S. 2S LGBTQ.
Well, 2S isn't abroad. That's why.
Rights abroad. What? Rights abroad. Oh, why would we be supporting rights abroad? I mean, what? I don't understand even. Invest $6.8 billion in national infrastructure. That's not a lot.
Go in the other and put in some.
Okay, hang on a sec here. In national infrastructure, rail, ports, energy, yeah?
No.
No? Not national? Okay.
Well, all right, fine.
Let's put that in. Expand EV charging. No. And restore $5,000 rebate. Restore the anti-Elon cancellation of the rebate. Okay. Other.
I would like to see Trudeau go to trial.
For what? Crimes against
anything? Any of those crazy
COVID
things that happened and got canceled now and are not going to be reopened.
Cancel vaccine mandates of all type, of all COVID vaccine mandates of all types. And what were you saying about Trudeau?
Mandates.
What were you saying about Trudeau? What? Going like.
Well, there was like the SNC-Lavalin and all those scandals that are now just, you know, gone. Up and vanished like a fart in the wind. Because it's not just Trudeau. That's a bunch of those ministers that are still in there right now.
Council Global Affairs Canada.
Keep going. Write all that down that I said. All of it. Verbatim. Go to the next question.
Okay, well, is there anything more, though? Council Global Affairs, what else? I mean.
Just go to the next one.
Gun rights? No, you don't want to just keep going. Oh, and now looking at the same list, which ones do you think are the least necessary for Canada right now?
Building homes.
Well, I mean, that's not the least, right? I mean,
this shouldn't be the government's business.
Yeah, I know. It's
the government is not building homes. The government isn't a home builder.
The least, least is that increased CBC funding, least foreign aid is least. Increased carbon tax is least.
Queer rights abroad.
Is least, yeah. And then EV. Yeah.
Next.
The new government plans to add $130 billion in new spending in the next 4 years to address major national challenges, including... I'm getting so fed up with Canada. Including new defense spending, housing, and tax cuts. This will increase Canada's federal debt significantly by $225 billion. How do you see this approach? It's necessary. Canada needs this. The goals may be right, but the spending should be more restrained. I'm concerned. We can't afford this level of debt. The goal sounds noble, but this much debt risks long-term damage. I'm not sure. I need more information and other.
You can go to other and say it's fucking asinine, or you can just click on I'm concerned.
The new government plans to add 130 in the next two other national challenges. I'm concerned we can't afford this level of debt. So not even the goals are right because just we don't even know, right? Okay. How do you feel about the future of Canada after this election? Optimistic, there's a chance for real progress. Cautiously optimistic, hoping things improve, but skeptical. Concerned, uncertain of the direction we're heading in. Defeated, losing faith that things will ever improve. I'm not sure, still processing.
I would say I'm cautiously optimistic. Not because I wanted Carney to win, but anything's better than what we had.
Yeah. How would you rate the Canadians, the Canada, Canadian media's coverage of the federal election on the most pressing issues facing Canada today. Excellent, good, average, poor, unsure.
Piss poor.
Poor. Poor. Is there one below poor? I mean, if there were a new media outlet in Canada that is fact-based, politically unbiased, and consistently investigated the most pressing issues, would you like to try it? Yes, I would definitely try the new media, fact-based independent journalism that tackles important issues without political coloring is exactly what we need. Maybe it depends on what topics and perspectives the newspaper covers.
This is going to end up being a long advertisement.
Yeah. No, I'm happy with my current news sources. Well, let's put yes, I guess.
Just okay. You're in luck.
Oh, though, let's put maybe, right?
Yeah.
Put maybe, yeah. Oh, you're almost done. Enter. Oh. Enter your email to get the survey results in your inbox. Plus, thank you. Enjoy exclusive offer to discover the Epoch Times. Maybe I'll get a complimentary Epoch Times. I've already canceled my membership multiple times. Or at least once. An exclusive offer for you. So here you go. Did you know that only 32% of Canadians trust the media? Here's how you can stay informed without the bias.
All the listeners as well.
What?
We don't have to read this ad. All the listeners as well. You can skip. Where's their results?
It's in my inbox. Oh, here, get this offer. See, $1 for 6 months. I mean, the problem is I did that last time and then I canceled it after 6 months. Because you have the beat of Epoch Times, right? You're paying for that already, right? So I shouldn't have to.
That's right. I stopped paying a while ago. But
they did you? Should I do it then or no?
Give you like a year of grace and then I'll jump on the $1 offer again.
All right. I won't. I'll just skip this. Choose free trading and investment guides. Oh, my God. No, thanks.
This is what you got us into? You took us down a native ad loophole?
Yeah.
All right, well, I need to know the results at least.
Yeah.
See, I mean, I can guess what it's going to say. You're in luck. The Epoch Times.
Okay, well, I got the poll back already, so. You ready? We might as well continue the segment.
Yep.
So poll results are in. Let me just zoom in a little bit on this. Move, zoom, plus. Dear reader, thank you for taking the time to share your thoughts in our survey. Is Canada moving in a better direction? With input from over 4,000 respondents, I mean, that's not bad considering some of those polls are like 1,000 seems to be, you know, indicative of the overall opinions. So 4,000 so far, the results reveal some fascinating insights. And as promised, we're excited to share these findings. So after this federal election, do you think they're moving in a better direction? Yes. Wow. What? 39%. No, I think things will get worse. 35%. There's your polarization right there. These are the different universes. Wow, that's surprising, actually.
Hey, mine isn't even on there. Or does mine fall into maybe two? Oh, no, I'm thinking of a different question.
How confident are you in the new government's ability to manage Canada-U.S. trade? Very confident, 30%. And the rest are 21, 21, and 25. Wow. That's pretty spread out right there. In your view, what should the top three priorities be for the government? The economy is number one at 54, cost of living number two at 42, and then housing afforded. Oh, hang on. It's not in order, this one. It's in alpha. Is it? What kind of order is this? Why would they have it in that kind of order? So 34%, 33%, 33% is healthcare, Canada, U.S. trade talks, national debt and spending. So I don't know. That's a little alarming. Below. Oh, there's that other. There's the deal. $1 for 6 months, just in case you change your mind. Some key policy commitments from Prime Minister: removing trade barriers, 76%. Cancel the capital gains, 43%. Make Canada an energy superpower, 61. I mean, There you go.
2% for queer rights overseas.
2%. Wow. 3% foreign aid. So, so that's a good point, actually. There are some really, really low ones, right? Increasing CBC funding. So some of the things seem to be split quite evenly, but some of these, like...
Which is a good sign, because that makes me think it's nonpartisan, considering a bunch of the other polling is going against us.
Yeah. And looking at the same list, which ones do you think are the least necessary? 56 for foreign aid, 57% for increased CBC funding, 44 on increasing carbon tax. What was the increase in carbon tax on this one? 5%. Yeah. It's hard to believe there's even 5% that are still looking at that. Increased funding for LGBTQ2I rights abroad, 66%. So yeah, that's kind of dumb. It's very similar to the other one. So the new government plans to add $130 billion. This will increase the debt. How do you see this approach? This is pretty evenly split. 22, 20, well,
No, it's not. No, it's not. Because you can basically take the three middle ones and add them together. Right? The goals may be right, but the spending should be restrained. I'm concerned, and the goal sounds noble with this much debt risk. I mean, those are all kind of saying the same.
Okay, yeah, it's a good point. So it's 48, so 70, almost 70% says that's not good. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, see, I don't like that, the way those questions are structured then, right? They almost...
So that's, you gloss over it without thinking there's a clear majority that think you're nuts.
Yeah. How do you feel about the future of Canada after this election? 32% optimistic, 35% defeated. That's almost exactly the opposite right there. And then how would you rate the Canadians' media coverage of the federal election? 46% poor, 26% good. Generally fair with some gaps. Wow. So there you have it.
There you have it. Pretty on par. All right, I'll jump in here now. I'm going to jump in actually with this. So this is part of an article I pulled up because this is from Jacobin, whatever that is. But I promised I would, update on the Amazon thing. So this is I got some USA stuff more. But this is from an article I found. It's not the one I want to read. The Amazon effect. So Amazon's been doing something similar. So this is about how Amazon is disrupting Canada Post. Amazon's been doing something similar in the delivery field, which would align with that same thing we were looking at in the charts, where it looks like COVID brings them off the walls. That's when everyone's sort of Amazon delivery goes through the roof as well and never really comes back down.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if it's because of COVID even so much, but that's also just when Amazon's delivery service got to the point that it started to just make more sense than everything else. It's like that's sort of when they clicked in with the, we'll get it to you within 2 days. And it's like all of a sudden, well, maybe I don't have to drive out and get it today if I can get it here tomorrow.
Yeah.
Amazon's been doing something similar in the delivery field. Unlike with its warehouses, Amazon doesn't hire its own delivery drivers. Instead, it either uses independent contractors or gig with workers through its Amazon Flex platform, or it contracts the service out to delivery service partners like Intellicom, who hire workers themselves. In this model, Amazon can set aggressive delivery targets that force the workers into a stressful and precarious existence. It's no wonder Amazon's warehouse and delivery workers suffer high rates of injury. Now consider the broader consequences of that. As Amazon's warehousing and delivery models expand, they place pressure on competitors to follow suit, to speed up the pace of work, to adopt new forms of surveillance and algorithmic management, and to restrict worker pay, if not attack their unions altogether. When Lee talks about the need to make Canada Post delivery more competitive with Amazon or FedEx, whose workers are also non-union, it's pretty clear what he's suggesting. Not just mass layoffs, but an attack on the postal workers' union too. That leaves us with an important question to consider. Not just what we want the future of Canada Post to be, but also what kind of society we want to live in. We should want to take advantage of the post office's unique nationwide infrastructure to provide more and better services to Canadians instead of dismantling something that we may never be able to rebuild. But even more than that, see, this is the other problem. You give it all up to Amazon, and then Amazon just decides it's not like
viable,
financially viable to keep doing it anymore. Now we have to jack up the prices, or we don't like this government policy that says we have to pay these taxes, so we're pulling out. But even more than that, the government should see Amazon's low-wage non-union model is not just a threat to Canada Post, but to Canadian workers across the board, which is probably a bit hyperbolic, but I do want to jump over to...
Well, I don't like how it's talking about it being an attack on the unions. I mean, is it a direct attack on the unions? I mean...
Well, depending on what all they take on, then it does start to be, I guess, an attack against, you know, the other package delivery people's FedEx.
I mean, they're
all unionized, right? FedEx.
I know, but that's part of the problem is that all these unions are part of the problem. I mean, like, you know, seniority-based promotions without really having to do anything the unions are just...
That's what this guy says here. He says, David says, as a retired postie, the problem with Canada Post is their Marxist union, CUPW. They have no interest in workers, only acquiring wealth through union dues so they can spend lavishly for themselves.
Yeah, but meanwhile, it forces workers to it enables workers to be non-competitive and lazy asshole. I mean, it's frustrating.
So no,
I think the unions were good back in the Industrial Revolution. I mean, they probably needed some kind of solidarity against harmful practices, but now we have government legislation for all this stuff. Like, we have enough rules that the companies have to go by.
I think, I was looking for this other article that says that they pay, $2. Amazon has a contract of $2 per package.
Wow.
The Citigroup report estimated the Postal Service would need to charge an additional $1.46 per package.
To the Canada Post or just?
Well, that's the one where all I can find is it on the US one.
All right. Okay.
So the Amazon has a deal with the US for Canada. USPS for $2 a parcel, which is crazy. When I ship, I mean, I've never shipped anything through any of these third party carriers, Canada Post included, for $2. I guess the argument being, well, we've got 100 packages on there, so we're actually giving you 200 today. Express Post, $25. Anyway, I want to jump over to this one now since I did get my Instagram working. I think I'm interested to see if these numbers surprise you or not, because it kind of blew me away. I got to be honest. I did not. How do I rewind this? Maybe I have to refresh it. All right, let me see if I can zoom in on this.
Yeah, can you zoom in on a bit? Yeah.
See if this will play. Ready?
Yep.
By criminals, for criminals. Now consider Canada's missing persons rate per 100,000 people. British Columbia, 273. Saskatchewan, 146. Manitoba, 130. Alberta, 115. Nova Scotia, 112. Ontario, 111. Now compare those numbers internationally. El Salvador, before President Bukele's crackdown on gay.
How do you think these numbers are going to compare to internationally?
Beforehand, that one was probably 500 to 1,000, and afterwards it'll be like 30 to 50. That's my
prediction. For El Salvador?
Yeah.
Gangs had a missing persons rate of approximately 37.5 per 100,000. Canada, seen globally as peaceful and developed, now vastly outpaces a country once notorious for cartel activity. California, with a population more than Canada's largest province.
What do you think California's going to be?
I don't know. I mean, it's going to be around El Salvador. It's probably going to be 25 or 30.
Provinces has a missing persons rate of 5.5 per 100,000. That means British Columbia's rate.
You want to fact check me on the fly with Greg? What? See what Grok says for missing persons per 100,000 California.
Okay.
Rate is 4,864% higher. Read that again. Nearly 5,000% higher. What the actual fuck is going on? Let's zoom in on a high-profile case. In 2017...
Got an answer for us? You're muted.
Yeah, it's coming right now. It's 7.61 in 2025.
So check BC's now. Let's just do a quick fact check on the fly. So it's pretty close. I mean, it's quite a bit higher, but he was giving us 2024 numbers.
Yeah, yeah. Holy shit. Had the highest number of missing adults per capita in Canada with 269 reports. Oh, that's reports though, right? So is that what he's talking about? This is significantly higher than California's rate of 7.61.
Now let's just check one more. What's he say for Saskatchewan? I think he had Saskatchewan at like 150.
153.
Yeah. Oh my God. All right. So the numbers check out.
Billionaires Barry and Honey Sherman were found murdered in their Toronto mansion, bound, staged, and posed upright at their indoor pool, leather belts looped around a railing. Despite a scene straight out of a mob movie, Toronto police initially classified it as a domestic event. Barry Sherman had a net worth of $3.2 billion USD, making him the 12th wealthiest man in Canada. He appeared on Forbes' list of the world's billionaires for over 15 years. Ask yourself, if you walked into a room and saw two bodies dragged and displayed like that, would domestic violence even cross your mind? This leads to a disturbing question. Are organized crime hits
COVID and pharma related
being buried in Canada's missing persons data and misclassified as domestic incidents to avoid raising alarms? And it's not just murder. Service Ontario employees were caught working with organized crime to alter VIN numbers on stolen vehicles, enabling them to be resold without detection. Think about that. Government staff collaborating with car theft rings from inside the system. When you combine our exploding missing persons numbers, the fentanyl epidemic, rampant gang infiltration, and a justice system that seems more interested in optics than results, this doesn't look like coincidence anymore. It looks like a system in freefall. Canada is a nation.
So that's that one, and I'll follow that up with the other half of the blender guys. That was one of the blender guys. This is the other blender guy. What's going on? Okay.
Playground for the world's most dangerous criminals. But don't take my word for it. Here's the Minister of External Affairs from India.
Number of people with organized crime links from Punjab have been made welcome in Canada. We have been telling Canada, saying, look, these are wanted criminals from India. You have given them visas. They have come, many of them, in false documentation. And yet you allow them to live there. If you decide to import for political purposes people with very dubious, actually very negative background, there will be issues. You know, they have, in some cases, created problems in their own country as a result of their own policies.
Now consider that crime from India pales in comparison to the threats posed by Chinese criminal organizations. These groups are cleaning billions of dollars in casinos, which then flow through our banking system, infiltrating Canadian politics and more. One notorious leader of a Chinese narco group operated right out of Markham, Ontario, while his organization ran illegal casinos and engaged in human trafficking from multi-million dollar properties in our suburbs. You'd think our politicians would be focused on dismantling these criminal enterprises, but allegedly they are too busy enjoying these casinos to shut them down. These organizations have also infiltrated critical institutions, including the Canadian Border Services Agency. Whistleblowers have come forward alleging that CBSA managers instructed agents to destroy passports and documents which could have uncovered organized crime, all while also turning a blind eye to human smuggling operations at the border. Over the past 9 years, violent crime has surged, which is a direct consequence of reckless immigration policies and lenient bail reforms that treat crime as a mere inconvenience. whether it's due to incompetence or malice, doesn't make a difference. At this point, the Canadian government and its policies are a direct threat to the people of Canada. Canada has...
The double whammy from the Blender Boys.
That's great. So also David said in the chats here, I mean, this is what I was talking about. The Shermans were the main manufacturer of either ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine. Their home was bulldozed, contents and all, quietly, a year after their death. Suspicious or what? I seem to remember something about that too. I haven't fact-checked David there, but thanks, David. So, oh, and just so you know, just wait, just to follow up on your segment.
Yeah, I'm not done yet. I'm not done.
Okay.
So here's another, just a post on X from Mario Nafal. Toronto has more break-ins than New York, and Vancouver beats LA. The worst city in North America is in Canada, Lethbridge, Alberta, with a staggering 5,500 property crimes per 100,000. Kelowna, also in Western Canada, comes in second.
Wow.
Only one U.S. city, Pueblo, Colorado, makes the top three. Canada's biggest cities are now clocking higher property crime rates than the American metros most people think of first when they hear the word crime. Toronto and Vancouver have officially overtaken New York and Los Angeles in break-ins, thefts, and related offenses. Vancouver's rate is more than 4,900 property crimes per 100,000. Toronto trails behind but still edges out L.A. From 2019 to 2022, property crime surged across Canada while remaining relatively steady or even dropping in parts of the United States. Canadian
that
cities
makes so much sense. Go ahead.
Canadian cities make up only 10% of the urban areas ranked in the study, but they account for almost 25% of the worst hit by property crime. In eastern Canada, especially Quebec, crime rates are low. In the west, cities are seeing levels once thought typical of only major U.S. metro areas. So there's the list now of number one, Thunder Bay, Ontario. So this is for property crime. Thunder Bay, London, and Windsor are in the top 10. Thunder Bay, number one, two, London, Toronto, 57. So, yeah. That's, of course, a reply to God Saad. He was talking about how quickly the country was destroyed from within. Anyway, yeah, I'll let you take it from there.
No. That makes lots of sense. I mean, that's kind of what I've been sensing, but it's just good to see somebody break down the stats there a little bit on that, you know, because this is what it's what am I trying to do here? Chrome tab. So this is, I mean, this isn't directly related, but I mean, this is the graph that's been going around lately, right? Have you seen this?
Yep.
Man, I wonder why housing is so unaffordable and why Canadian teenagers can't find jobs. It's a real head scratcher. So here's net international migration from 52 to 2025. And there it goes, you know, do over every 5 years, kind of up and down. And then it gets to 2020 and boom. I mean, it is pretty crazy. It really is. It's like they must know. They must. It can't be incompetence.
There'd be an awful lot of incompetence. Or they know a bunch of people are about to die.
Right.
That's all going to even out.
Yeah, it's true. Canadian teenagers don't want to work at regular convenience stores, take up construction. Don't come here, cry on immigration. Canada is formed on immigration. People who really want to work, they find jobs elsewhere, anywhere, just like how immigrants are doing. Wow, this person's defending the whole thing. 17 likes, 18 likes. Wow. I wonder what people are saying to that. You're Indian, I guarantee it. Wow. I don't want to get into arguments in the comments, but...
Well, check out this chart and tell me what you think it is.
What that chart is. Wow. I don't know. Somebody's losing 60,000 millions.
It looks kind of like the Canada Post chart, right?
Yep, that's, yep.
Like eerily similar?
Yeah, that's true. That does look like that, like, yeah.
Three decent ones, but this is over a year, not over a decade.
Oh, okay.
But this is the budgetary balance for the government. from Canada.
Losses and gains. So that's the, so we gained one 2023. So there was 1 month only that we gained, or 2 months.
2 months.
And then it goes to 2020. Oh, so this is weirdly, it's a weird graph because the years are the different things, right? So that's net. So it's accumulated, right?
It's like they spend all the money by May every year.
Is it accumulation then?
It's got to be.
Yeah.
It's got to be. It doesn't say accumulated. It says year-to-date budgetary balance and budgetary balance excluding net actuarial losses and gains.
Yeah, because the, see the total there is
this 55 is
just million. More than the last month.
So you can see it's like we do okay until, I mean, we started this year in the hole, but usually we don't run out of money until like May. That's all downhill from there.
I was listening to somebody, and what was it? It was pre-COVID. If they went with pre-COVID numbers, we'd actually be doing better. Like we wouldn't be in deficit or something like that. Or I'm trying to remember what that was, if it was Canada or the States, but it was pretty mind blowing that just taking a couple parameters out, we'd be doing okay.
It was a bit of a.
Did you hear about this one?
No.
Are you going to fly Air Canada soon?
No. I tried.
Well, maybe it'll be better now. Give him another chance. Oh, come
on. It's buffering for some reason.
It's buffering.
You might have to redo it. I had a problem with something recently. Yeah, there you go.
You had to rebuffer?
It was a bit of a range of emotions this morning coming here and getting dressed for this flight.
C'est un moment historique qu'on vit aujourd'hui. J'ai trouvé ça une bonne initiative pour la communauté entière. Je suis comme un petit thrill de faire le vol aujourd'hui. J'ai là supporté ma fille, une de mes quatre enfants est dans la communauté. Quand j'ai vu qu'il y avait une occasion de supporter encore plus,
okay, là, mon nom de ça. I'm gonna have to dub this, I guess, right?
I signed up for it right away. Well, you can just read it out loud.
I signed up for it right away.
We are doing the first ever. Now, let me get that one straight because a few letters have been added to this one. 2S LGBTQIA plus flight ever in Canada. I do identify with the progress flag. There is something in there that represents me as well. So it was a bit of joy.
Which one do you think represents him?
Oh, I don't know. I'd have to take another look at him. Probably
it's a gay.
Pan. So, he's probably so Pan.
You can tell by looking. There he is. So is he two-spirit, gay, bi, trans,
and queer? Intersectional, maybe.
What is that with the
intersex, I? Intersex.
What's plus? Just anything else?
Yeah.
Like straight? Could it be straight? Binary?
No. Not white or straight.
In Canada. I do identify with the progress flag. There is something in there that represents me as well. So it was a bit of joy having the opportunity to do this flight today.
Aujourd'hui, ce que ça signifie, c'est vraiment un moment très spécial. C'est vraiment un terme de visibilité, de vraiment exprimer à tout le monde. On se sent vraiment accueilli, vraiment accepté pour qui on est.
Pour célébrer l'inclusion à la diversité, nous sommes heureux d'annoncer que le vol d'aujourd'hui
features our very first all 2S LGBTQIA+ crew.
The safety and the well-being of all the passengers on board rests in our hands. So it doesn't matter who they are, what they represent. I'm equally responsible for all of them.
D'ailleurs, on aimerait vous souligner, c'est le moment marquant de l'histoire canadienne.
And want to celebrate not just our community, but our freedom to be who we are, both at work and in society. Valuing people equally, both in the air and on the ground, and celebrating our identities, no matter what they are, with customers and our employees, is important to us. Shante, you all stay.
Unless you're right wing, then we don't accept you. I mean, if you voted for Pierre, no, you know. I mean, but that's where it's at. But the corporations should just. I mean, that's the problem, right? Why don't they just stay out of the whole thing? They got a virtue. Nobody's saying that we don't that they don't support them, and you know, you don't have to do all that to be supported. But this is where we're at.
This is where we're at.
Yeah. Good job, Air Canada.
Good job. All right, you want to do one?
Yeah, I mean, I guess just stick with that kind of stuff. I mean, this has come up here. This is Ryan Gerritsen again. He's like, this black mandated homeless shelter on the way. The city hall confirms. Have you heard about this?
The what's on the way?
A black only homeless shelter. Black mandated.
I'm okay.
Not only with all this, will this be all black residents, but only black employees will be working there. They're also making an all indigenous only shelter. There you go, Darren. You got a place. If something goes wrong in Grand America, you got a indigenous only. Segregation and discrimination alive and well. So I was looking at this Substack because this is what brought it up as well. So I thought I'll just play a little bit of, so we don't have to keep reading. But Canada's concrete examples of racist government policies, black-only homeless shelter. So it wasn't just like a meme. It seems like it's happening.
We see so much about the story of race and gangs and slavery and discrimination. Not really. I mean, obviously we weren't perfect, but we were the destination for the Underground Railway of runaway slaves. We were the free place. You'll remember that it was the British Empire, of which Canada was a part until 1867, that if that was what effectively ended slavery, first ended the slave trade, and then ended slavery itself. Canada benefited from that. We never had slavery. So please help me understand this, as published in the Toronto Sun newspaper. Great story, by the way, very well researched, and I'm glad they published it. The headline is this: black mandated homeless shelter on way.
This mandated mean that like just the blacks can have to go there?
I know, that doesn't make sense, does it?
Toronto officials are taking applications until Friday for City Council's new black mandated shelter, where everyone from employees to the homeless could be excluded on the basis of race. Oh, that's lovely. Going out on a limb here, non-black people will still be deeply involved by having to pay for all this. So don't worry. If you're not black and worried you'll be shut out, you'll still be included. Your taxes will, at least. Let me keep reading. City Hall has also decreed that experience in running a shelter is not a requirement for those submitting applications. Oh, really? Well, what could possibly go wrong? Quote, the city's shelter and support services division says the new shelter will help make Toronto's services reflective of the diversity of the city, but offered no specifics as to where it would go or when it might open. Diversity, eh? I thought diversity meant variety, not just one race. It might be clearer to understand if someone had proposed a whites-only homeless shelter. Would anyone call that diversity? But no one is that racist, except this is exactly the same thing. I'll keep reading. A city document says Shelter Services is developing, quote, at least one black mandated shelter by 2033.
There's too many jokes. I mean, there's too many jokes. I just got to keep my mouth shut.
2033, that's 8 years from now. Takes 8 years to build a homeless shelter.
What's that?
You can tell Ezra's having a hard time not cracking some of them.
8 years? The whole Second World War wasn't even 6 years. Well, of course it takes 8 years. You see, there's so many important people who are in the poverty industry. And of course, we have to go through their processes and their consultations. You see, a lot of very important people have to have very important meetings for which they're all paid. It's not actually about homeless people. It's about people who profit off homeless people. That's very different. I'd even put the mayor of Toronto in that. Despite her dressing up for Caravana here, she's actually not black herself. And I guess she would be banned from the homeless shelter if things don't turn out well for her.
That's enough of him. So Canada's racist. This brings us to a blender here and tax Canada's racist taxes. And you know, I'm like basically paying for you, Darren. It looks like. Good morning. It's Thursday, April 17th. In today's news, a Department of Finance report reveals our tax system penalizes white male Canadians. The WHO tries to sell a new pandemic agreement. Federal party leaders take each other on in a French debate. A UK Supreme Court throws a wrench in gender ideology and much more. So Canada's tax system is engineered to penalize white male Canadians. According to Government of Canada's own data, recent immigrants received 205% more in Canada child benefits than people born in Canada. That's not speculation. That's from the 2025 report on federal tax expenditures. And it lines up perfectly with both the UN's plan for replacement migration and Justin Trudeau's 2016 speech at the World Forum, the World Economic Forum, where he called Syrian refugees the future of the Canadian economy. It wasn't a metaphor, it was a business plan. The same report shows that Canada's tax system reduces the income gap between Indigenous and white males. Hey, that's me and you, buddy, by $4,500.
And between less tax than you.
And between racialized people and white Canadians by 3,000. So you're not racialized, but you're Indigenous, so you're kind of a category even further to the left. This isn't just virtue signaling. This is state-engineered wealth redistribution that openly tracks how much money is being taken from one race and handed to another. And let's be clear, white Canadians aren't even the highest earners. South Koreans, Chinese, and South Asians top the income ladder. So why is the system designed specifically to redistribute from white, from wealth, redistribute wealth from white people? This is what equity really means in practice, punishing people based on race and sex, not need. Consider this. Trans women and non-binary individuals receive 1,343% more in child benefits than men. Women receive 3,157% more, while men pay 66% of all the federal personal income taxes, while women pay just 34%. And yet, well, where do the trans fit? That equals 100%. So what about the non-binaries? They must pay for something.
Zero, buddy, zero. Yeah.
And yet, if you're a man raising kids in this country, the only way to get child benefits is to throw on a dress and declare yourself a woman. So it goes on and on here. I'm not going to keep reading that, but yeah, that's pretty interesting as well, just to keep it racialized.
Keep it racialized. Segregation, baby. That's what it's all about. That's what it's all about. All right, I'll jump in here with this one from Equifax. It says non-mortgage delinquencies reach levels not seen since 2009. 1.4 million people in Canada missed a credit payment as refinancing and renewals dominate the quarter one mortgage market. Economic uncertainty continued to impact credit usage and consumer financial health across Canada. Ooh, pardon me. During the first quarter of 2025, according to Equifax, Canada's latest market pulse, total consumer debt in Canada is $2.55 trillion, up 4% year over year, but down more than $6 billion from the end of 2024. Average non-mortgage debt per consumer rose to $21,859. Hey, I'm way under that, at least. In Q1, we often observe seasonal changes in credit usage during the first quarter. Generally speaking, in the spring, we tend to see mortgage debt rising. Card spending slows, but balances continue to rise. After experiencing high numbers for new credit card openings in 23-24, the first quarter of 25 saw a 10% decline in new card originations. Consumers that have lower credit scores accounted for an increase in new card openings, potentially indicating heightened credit reliance and financial strain in this consumer group. Average monthly credit card spend per cardholder fell by $107 during quarter one. Well, not just in the USA, you'll notice. It's everywhere. A drop in credit card spending when combined with increased payment amounts can imply improving financial conditions of consumers, said Oaks. Our data shows card payment levels, especially for younger consumers, are starting to fall, indicating the spending slowdown is likely driven more by consumers trying to be prudent rather than switching from credit to debit for financing. The average credit card pay rate decreased to 52.9%, down 32 basis points. Notably, younger consumers under 35 showed a more dramatic shift, with their average pay rate falling 4%, right? 392 basis points from 62.9% to 58.9%. This same group also exhibited the greatest increase in the level of minimum payers, rising 25 basis points year over year. I don't care about the mortgage stuff. While some consumers showed signs of prudence in their spending choices during the first quarter, missed payments continued to rise across most credit products. In total, more than 1.4 million consumers, one in 22. That's one in 22. Like, no, that's probably about right. Missed at least one credit card payment during the quarter. Although mortgage holders experienced some stabilization thanks to steady interest rates, financial strain remained acute for non-mortgage consumers. Consumer level delinquency rates among non-mortgage holders rose 9% compared to 6% for mortgage holders. Ontario continued to remain a hot spot for financial stress in Canada, experiencing the most pronounced increase in delinquency rates across all credit products. Ontario's 90-day mortgage delinquency rate rose to 0.25% and substantial 71% increase. British Columbia followed with a notable rise of 33%. Ontario also led the rise in non-mortgage delinquencies, up 24% year over year, followed by Alberta at 15.9% and Quebec at 13.9%. The highest credit card delinquency rates were observed among younger consumers under the age of 26 at 5.38%, a significant 20% increase year over year. Auto loans followed a similar trend, with the delinquency rate for younger consumers rising by 30% to 2%. We're observing positive shifts in consumer behavior. So these are just the year-over-year change in the age groups, up 20%, 21%, 21, 17, 13. And, of course, the 65-plus gats that voted in Carney are at 3%. yeah, so I think I could probably wrap it up around there. That's probably good.
How did the major city shake out there? Just take a quick boo, scroll up two charts and...
Major cities, so average debt, Calgary 23,000, Edmonton 23, Halifax 21, ouch, and Halifax 21. I mean, that's the same as here with probably half the GDP.
Yeah.
Montreal 16,000, Ottawa 19,000, Toronto 21, Vancouver 23, Fort McMurray 37%. And the delinquency rates, Calgary 14 up to 24% in Toronto. I mean,
apparently there's a huge condo crash in Toronto right now. There's a whack of them for sale, and the prices have completely collapsed.
Seems like it gets worse before it gets better.
Well, let's finish off with this then. Happy Pride Month. Elizabeth May is out there. Can you believe this? She sponsors a petition asking that Parliament declare an LGBTQ genocide in Canada.
Ooh.
What? How could that be? How can be?
When does it start?
Well, apparently it's already happening. I mean,
oh,
this is Blacklock's reporter, May 29th, so a few days ago. Green Party, Elizabeth May, sponsored a petition asking that Parliament declare a genocide in Canada for the LGBTQ. She should have included the 2S and the plus and the I. She doesn't have all of them. She's not inclusive. May did not comment on the measure yesterday, but her first remarks on the 45th Parliament, in her first remarks, human rights of the Canadian LGB community are endangered. Why is that? Do you know why that would be?
Because of the genocide.
I know, but what genocide? What is she talking about? What genocide?
Well, the LGBT genocide.
No, but what's happening?
Well, we're not letting them.
Who's not letting who?
Well, we're not letting them medically modify the kids anymore.
That's the kids, though. That's not.
Well, that's genocide, buddy.
Is that what it is? Is it because of Alberta and the West?
Pretty much.
Oh, really, though? I wonder what she's talking about.
Was she drunk?
I won't answer that.
Are you done?
I'm done.
I got one more. The WHO pandemic treaty was adopted. What does it mean for Canada? So this is... I'm going to go down to the bottom. So this, after 3 years of negotiations, the World Health Organization has formally adopted a legally binding agreement aiming to improve member countries' pandemic preparedness and response. We'll skip down here to the requirements. The pandemic treaty builds on the international health regulations that were adopted in 2005, which created a legal framework that defined countries' rights and obligations in handling public health events and emergencies. The new agreement calls for countries to adopt a One Health approach, which involves recognizing that human health is closely linked and interdependent with the health of the wider environment and ecosystems. It calls for a multi-sectoral approach to preventing and responding to pandemics. I mean, it sounds like they could use climate.
Yeah. I mean, remember the clip we played where Greta was, you know, basically combining climate and the pandemic together?
By signing the agreement, Canada agrees to strengthen its pandemic surveillance and develop a national plan that coordinates sectors such as health, agriculture, and the environment to detect infectious diseases. The environment is there again. Canada also agrees to strengthen and maintain a resilient healthcare system, reinforce its supply chains for pandemic-related health products, improve national health information systems in accordance with its laws, and provide decent work and safe and healthy environment for essential workers during pandemics. The agreement also requires Canada to strengthen public health literacy and provide timely and accurate information around pandemics and public safety. It calls for the country to use regulatory measures to respond to substandard and falsified pandemic-related health products during pandemics. What do you think they're talking about there?
I don't know.
Ivermectin.
Yeah.
The treaty requires drug manufacturers to sign legally binding contracts with the WHO to allocate up to 20% of their vaccines, therapeutics, and tests to the organization during a pandemic, which would then be distributed to developing countries. It says each country should avoid maintaining stockpiles of pandemic-related health products that unnecessarily exceed the quantities anticipated to be needed. The treaty also establishes a conference of the parties that will examine how the agreement is being implemented and review its functioning every 5 years. All countries will periodically report to this governing body on how it is implementing the agreement and may, in response, adopt measures to help their countries meet the obligations. The pandemic agreement notes that it does not give WHO the authority to control or dictate how the countries carry out their laws. It also does not allow it to impose any requirements that parties take specific actions, such as banning travelers, implementing lockdowns, or imposing vaccine mandates. While the agreement states that all countries agree on the need to refrain from taking actions that adversely affect their preparedness in response to pandemics, it states that the countries have the right to implement health measures in accordance with their relevant national law and obligations under international law. The agreement states that 2 years after entering into the pandemic agreement, any country may withdraw. 2 years. Why do you got to wait 2 years? Canadian government has been supportive of the pandemic agreement from the beginning of the process. Canada was one of the WHO member states that agreed in December 21 to launch an intergovernmental negotiating body to help the agreement. So,
of course we did, because we send WHO money all the time through global affairs, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So there you have it. That one's been in the, it's funny because it's been in the windshield for a long time and we finally just got there.
Yeah. Well, they kind of, I think they messed it up a couple times, but, so Canada has sent, to the WHO, 18 million annually, then biennium. What's a biennium? Wow. 2 years, 175 million we sent. Yeah, that's pretty crazy. We also sent 100 million to the WHO for health systems and response connector. Like, it's just a racket, eh? You know?
It's a racket. That's a pretty good word for it, I would say.
It's just a racket. Then they come back and give us a treaty that we have to follow after we spend hundreds of millions with them. Thanks. Thanks, Canada.
There you have it. I guess we'll call that a wrap. Check out the a-list.ca if you want to support us. Like, subscribe, comment, and share the YouTube. Check out all our other stuff at grimerica.ca, adultbrain.ca for all the audiobooks, and contact at thecabin.com for all the trips and events. Other than that, we love you guys. Check out the interview we did earlier, too, with, what was her name again?
It was Bonnie? Oh, my God.
Oh.
Hang on a sec. Let me find it real quick here.
This is a problem with live to date.
Yeah, exactly. And then my notes don't open up in time for me. Donna Laframboise.
Laframboise. Check it out.
It was about a trucker book. I mean, it was actually a really, really, really good book. Like, she has done work that could be, you know, basically put into a library for everybody in the future. Like, here's what happened during the convoy. Listener stories from the truckers themselves. It's great, a great chat. Check out her channel for that chat and check out her book. It's amazing. It really is. And she's got links to pictures on the Substack. I mean, she did a really, really good job with it. I mean, it made me cry multiple times. I'm trying to work and I just kept bawling. And I was like, oh my God, this is so emotional. Like,
crying Graham, check it out.
Some of it in a good way, you know, it wasn't super sad. But if you're feeling down and you want to get a glimpse of how humanity can be with each other, read the book.
All right, guys, there you have it. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Who's gonna kill this sacred cow? You were never political anyhow. Since when did you start trusting in the government? Since when was it okay to ridicule and shame your neighbor? Your opinions have become as fickle as artificial flavors. What matters most to you? What the TV host told you to do? Or a moral compass that points true north? Oh, true. Who's gonna kill this sacred cow? You were never religious anyhow. Since when did you kiss the ring on the hand of the Pope? Since when do we need pharmaceuticals to cope? Your soul has become, ever-loving soul has become, as brittle as communion wafers. What matters most to you? What the Holy Ghost told you to do? Or a moral compass that points true north? Oh, true. I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. Bureaucrats think I'm non-essential anyhow. Since when has our culture become so lowbrow? It's all touchscreens and nobody has any know-how. Your idea of fun is taking 1,001 photos of your duck face. Matters most to you what the celebrity's post told you was cool, or a moral compass that points true north? Oh, true. I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. I'm gonna kill your 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 sacred cow.